From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to this Wednesday edition of Washington Watch. I am your host, Jody Heiss, and as always, a great honor to be sitting in today for Tony. And thank you so much for joining us as well. Well, of course, we're heading into the long Independence Day weekend. And as we do so, we always reflect on the birth of our nation and what has made our country so great. And among all the things that we can come up with, we certainly remember the founding fathers who considered religious liberty to be a paramount principle in this new nation that they established. And they knew that religious freedom cannot simply be understood on the level of belief. Religion, as they often referred to it, certainly is a belief, but belief itself necessitates action. And they understood that. But that seems to be lost on many in society today, particularly those on the left who cry Christian nationalism when government officials talk about their faith.
The mainstream media here. If you're here, I want you to hear this. Hear me. I don't care what you say about me. I don't care what you do in your newsroom. I don't care about your plans and your schemes to bring this nation down with your Democratic friends. Why? Because Jesus Christ is still on the throne.
Powerful. That was North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson speaking last month at the Faith and Freedom Coalition's annual conference. So what does it say about our nation when people have issues with a Christian saying that Jesus is on the throne? Well, I'll be asking Lieutenant Governor Robinson when he joins me in just a few moments. And in this hostile environment, it's tempting for Christians not to engage, but the Christian life, it's not about doing things the easy way. I'll be joined a little bit later in the program by Bunny Pounds to unpack that. And speaking of hostility, there's still a lot of displeasure from the left over the move by some states to return back to the Bible and to things like the Ten Commandments in the classrooms.
By what we are told, it is in fact religious indoctrination. It scoffs at the Establishment Clause's neutrality mandate and elevates the governor and the government to the chief decider of a child's faith.
Well, that was Alana Odoms. She's the executive director of the ACLU in Louisiana. She was protesting her state's new law regarding the Ten Commandments in the classrooms. And surprisingly, the new law is also receiving some oppositions from some liberal Jews. Rabbi Tuli Wise will join me to talk about that and what's behind the opposition from some Jews on the Ten Commandments. And then finally, with Election Day a little more than just 4 months away, David Clawson is going to be joining me for a biblical worldview discussion on the proper Christian approach to government. You don't want to miss that. So we've got a lot coming your way today. You don't want to miss a single bit of it. But of course, if you do, as I share time and time again, you can always catch it again at our website, TonyPerkins.com. Tons of great information there available for you. And you don't want to miss any of it. TonyPerkins.com. All right, let's jump into our first topic for the day. Last month, the Faith and Freedom Coalition held its 15th annual Road to the Majority Policy Conference. It drew thousands of grassroots attendees, various faith leaders from literally every corner of our country. It featured an extensive lineup of speakers, including former President Donald Trump. But while the events certainly created a buzz for a number of different reasons, one of the speakers drew some unexpected attention for saying something that most of us would not even consider remotely to be controversial. He said, Jesus Christ is still on the throne. Well, what does it say about the state of our nation when a statement like that is somehow considered disturbing or considered fascist or Christian nationalism, or perhaps even some attempt to inject a theocracy into our system of government? Well, Joining me now to discuss this is the man who made that statement, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. Lieutenant Governor, welcome back to the program. Always great to have you, sir.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, listen, you know, it feels these days that our society somehow is quick to embrace when someone reveals their sexuality or when someone reveals what they think might be their gender. But when it comes to someone like yourself who shows their faith, in particular, if you're a public servant, somehow that's frowned upon these days. What do you think it says about where we are as a nation?
Well, you know, honestly, the bottom line is this. The folks on the left are not so much interested in religion or not so much interested in sexuality. They're interested in one word. They're interested in control. You know, they love to call the folks on the right fascists, but there are no bigger fascists on this planet than those folks on the left. They want to completely shut out every other voice that goes against any narrative that they believe in. They don't want to have open and honest dialogue. One of the things that really just grates on my nerves is when I hear these extreme leftists talk about open and honest dialogue. And they're all for open and honest dialogue until someone steps up to the podium and starts to espouse views that they vehemently disagree with. Then all of a sudden, that person has to be doxxed, that person has to be canceled, that person has to be removed. They can't come to the college campus. They can't come down and speak in the public square because they don't like the message that they're delivering. So I think what it really points to is the fact that there are a number of people in our society that want to remove freedom itself from our society as a whole.
There's no question about that, and I've certainly experienced it as well, and you're exactly right. If there is a cutting against the grain of their agenda and ideology, then they are all out to destroy you, to silence you, to do whatever they can to do so. And as I mentioned at the top of the program, former President Donald Trump is also one of the speakers at the Faith and Freedom Coalition conference. I want to play a brief clip of his remarks and gets your response. Play clip 5, please.
The reason the radical left will always come after religious believers is simple, because they know that our allegiance is not to them. Our allegiance is not to them. Our allegiance is to our country, and our allegiance is to our Creator.
Your comments on that?
That's no true words were ever spoken. You look at any despot around the world that's ever sought to control people en masse, and that's one of the first things they do. One of the first things they do is they get rid of religion because they try to form themselves as God. As God has said, there's no other God before me. You'll have no other God before me. Well, these despotic governments, they want no other God before that despotic government. And there are people in this nation that would love to see our government form that way, to where our government is God, not God. No God, no family, no country, just simply government would be the structure that would run everything. And you can see it in every corner. At every turn, you see it in every piece of policy they write, the things that come out of their mouth. They make it plain that they want to rule your life. They don't want anything to be more important to you than their government.
And that government has really, and what you're saying, it is their religion. And they bow to it, and they want everyone else to bow to it as well. We actually covered this issue earlier in the week, but the left is up in arms over Oklahoma's top education official last week when he pushed out a memo requiring every Oklahoma school to incorporate the Bible as instructional support for students in grades 5 through 12. What does it say about the left when they don't see the importance at all, nor do they see any value of having basic knowledge of unquestionably the most significant book in history, and certainly one that is the cornerstone of Western civilization? But the left wants children to know nothing about the Bible.
Well, you know, it speaks of their hatred of the fact that people have an allegiance to something besides them. So let's go back and let's look at just a couple of examples in history, big examples in history. The writing of our own Constitution, when our Constitution was being crafted, It's told that those men, when they could no longer go further on their own wisdom, they went across the street to church and they prayed for wisdom from God to continue to work to finish the Constitution. Abraham Lincoln, who famously called for you know a week or a month of fasting and prayer during the Civil War, that things would turn around and that the nation would survive. You know, our nation has been rooted in the scriptures. And in order for children, in order for our citizens to understand how our nation was formed, some folks may not like this, but you need to have a basic understanding of the book that those individuals were leaning to get their wisdom and their understanding. Doesn't say that you have to be a Christian, doesn't say that you have to be adhere to those tenets, but you should have an actual working knowledge of what the Bible is and what the structure of it is and why those individuals chose to lean on that book in particular, that book being the Holy Bible, to help them do the things that they were doing as government officials or as leaders.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, far in a way, the Bible is quoted more than any other book among our founders and multiple times. I mean, as you mentioned, be it Abraham Lincoln or we can go to even Benjamin Franklin, who they love to say was a deist. I mean, you can go to Jefferson, you can go to Washington, you go on and on and on and on. These people were constantly quoting the Bible, and our whole system of government is resting upon that. And to say we can't teach it, even historically, refer to the most quoted book, it makes no sense at all. And yet, Lieutenant Governor, these same individuals have no problem trying to radicalize our children with gender ideology and even pornography in the schools.
Sure.
It just makes no sense whatsoever.
Absolutely. You know, it's one of the fights that we had here at home, you know, when we presented those objectionable materials, that pornography, as you put it, which is exactly what it was, we presented that to television cameras on the front porch of our office. And when those television cameras, when those television stations aired those pictures that evening, they had to blur those images out on their news programs. And so you think about that, something that could not be aired on the 6 o'clock news being presented to our children, while at the same time, some of those same folks being angry because someone wants to explain to children what the Bible is and how it was a part of the crafting and forming of our nation. It seems like something's impossible, but that's where we are.
Absolutely. Final question for you, and we've got less than a minute, but your basic encouragement to Christians out there who are in the midst of a hostile government, what would you say to them?
Remember who we are. Remember who we serve. Remember that we can appeal to heaven when everything goes wrong, no matter whether it's the court system, the legislature, and no matter what it is. If everything else is going wrong, we need to continue to remember as Christians who we serve and that the ultimate authority is Jesus Christ. That's why I made the statement that I made in that speech, that Jesus is still on the throne. He is still our help, and a present help and a constant help in a time of need. And when no other man on earth wants to do the right thing, we can still appeal to heaven and still appeal to Jesus Christ to get the right thing done.
Well, thank you so much, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. As I told you before we got started, my wife and I sat down together and watched your speech. It was powerful, and I encourage others to do the same. Thank you for boldly standing up for the kingdom. We're so grateful, and thank you for joining us on Washington Watch. All right, friends, don't go anywhere. On the other side of the break, author Bunny Pounds is going to be joining me to share about Jesus and politics and her walk with God in a mud-slinging profession. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a second.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This 3-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, an honor to be sitting in today for Tony. All right, as I discussed in the last segment, Christians in America today are certainly living in a very hostile environment. But as my next guest has written, the Christian life isn't about doing things the easy way. It's about living as Christ, even in a hostile environment. This quotation from the book Jesus in Politics certainly resonates with any Christian who's seeking to follow Christ daily in today's culture. But I think it's especially true for those working in the world of politics. And I've certainly seen that in my own time on Capitol Hill. So how should Christians, who certainly have been called to be set apart, how should Christians learn to walk in the mud-slinging world of Washington, D.C., and I guess particularly in the months leading up to the November elections? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Bunny Pounds. Bunny is the author of Jesus in Politics, One Woman's Walk with God in a Mud-Slinging Profession. She also serves as the founder and president of Christians Engaged, which incidentally earlier this week merged with the Family Policy Alliance Foundation. Bunny, thanks so much for joining us, and congratulations on your organization's recent merger.
Well, thank you, Jody. We're so excited to be a part of the FPA family, and Christians Engaged will be the church outreach program and Christian outreach program for the Family Policy Alliance councils around the country. And we're super excited to engage more Christians to take what we've already learned as far as voter mobilization and education and push that to the next level around the country.
Well, that's fantastic. And I want to get more into that in particular here in just a few moments. But you yourself, you had quite an incredible experience. You've got quite a journey, spending 16 years or so in Washington, D.C., working in the political sphere, while at the same time being an open witness for the Lord Jesus. Tell us a little bit more about your story.
Well, I went to Bible school and I thought I was going to be a missionary to Latin America. And all of a sudden, I'm marrying a man in pest control and having to find my voice and my calling in this country. But God called me specifically, Jody, as I know he's called you as well, into the political and governmental world. I really saw there was a huge need for Christians to speak up on the issues of our day, specifically pro-life, pro-family, pro-religious liberty things. But then also activate to walk beside members of Congress. And so I was able to run campaigns for members, many of your friends, Christian conservatives in Congress, Congressman Jeb Hensarling, Michael Cloud, and many others. But also to activate Christians that didn't have a voice. How do we get involved? How do we pray, vote, and engage? And so after I ran for Congress in 2018, the Lord gave me a mandate to go find the Awakening Church and plug them into habits of prayer, voting, and engagement for the well-being of America. And I know, as you believe, that the church is the answer. The body of Christ being the hands and feet of Jesus in the government space is truly the answer for our nation.
Absolutely. And I personally have said it 1,000 times. We cannot fix what's wrong in our country by passing another piece of legislation or by throwing another $1 trillion at whatever the problem may be. We need the good hand of God to navigate us through these turbulent days. And for that to happen, we need believers to step up to the plate. And we say around here at FRC all the time is pray, vote, stand. We've got to have that. And you are just magnifying that message yourself, and we're so grateful. Something that you shared with readers, the importance of knowing what good leadership really looks like through the political realm in particular. But why do you believe it's so hard to get the right kinds of leaders elected into various government positions?
Well, we have two things going on, Jody. Number one, a lot of Christians still believe that there's a divide between the secular and the sacred, when all of our life should be sacred. So if we're going and past the 100-foot marker into the polling place, that's an important thing as part of our discipleship to the Lord. As leaders, we're called to walk with God in every place that we go. So there's not this divide of when I go to church, I act like a Christian, but when I go to Capitol Hill, I don't act like a Christian. We have to be Christ followers everywhere we go. So we do two things within Christians Engage. We help Christians activate with our voter mobilization communication system around every election. They get reminders. They get prayers every week to learn how to pray for their elected officials. We have now 8 national curriculum projects to help Christians activate on civics and biblical worldview topics. But we also teach Christians, hey, when you get in a place of leadership, we've had people elected to state representative, city council, school board. When you get to that place, you have to watch your heart. You have to walk with God, and you have to deal with offenses, bitterness, unforgiveness, fear, anger, all the enemies of our soul that try to attack us and to take us down. So Christians, number one, need to step into the fray. Don't be afraid of what the enemy might bring and how hard it is and the struggle. But also, as you do that, we've got to walk with Jesus, be accountable to our brothers and sisters, and continue to guard our heart and our soul as we do that and be effective leaders.
Amen and amen. Great, great word. All right, last question. I do want to get into your organization. One of the things that impressed me so much is your aim to sign up 1 million Christians who are engaged in the upcoming election, but also local elections across the country and for years to come. What are some ways that people can get involved politically that perhaps they may not be aware of?
Such a great question. You know, so often, Jody, we barely vote in presidential elections, but we have an opportunity within our nation to vote 3 or 4 times a year, sometimes in our states. We as believers are not voting in primaries, so therefore we're not picking the leaders that we need in November sometimes. We're not voting in local elections and school boards. So we ask every Christian around the country to take our pledge to pray, vote, and engage. They can go to ChristiansEngaged.org right now, fill that out, and we will get them voting reminders for every election, 4 text and 4 emails. They will get prayer videos and prayer scriptures every Monday, and then
If I can, we've only got a few seconds. Give me that website again, and also how people can get your book.
ChristiansEngaged.org, and you can get the book at the website or on Amazon as well. But let's activate for America.
Bunny Pounds, thank you so much. Awesome work you're doing. Thank you for joining us on Washington Watch. All right, friends, coming up after the break, the battle over the Ten Commandments. Why are some Jews even opposed to it? Stay tuned. We'll cover it in a moment.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch. All right, last month, you probably remember Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry signed a law that requires the Ten Commandments to be hung in every public classroom in the state. At the time when there's spiraling anti-Semitism, you would think that this would be accepted across the board. It certainly represents the values that are appreciated both by the Jewish community as well as the Christian community. But unfortunately, it's not been universally accepted within the Jewish community. Well, my next guest says that if American Jews want to remain free and safe in the United States, they must reverse their community's official opposition to public displays of the Bible, applaud Governor Landry, and do everything they can to display the Ten Commandments in the rest of the 49 states. Well, why? Well, here to answer that question and much more is Rabbi Tuli Wise. He is the founder of Israel 365. Rabbi, welcome to the program. Great to have you.
It's my pleasure. It's good to be here with you.
All right, so let's talk about this. What is your opinion on the Louisiana law? Is it okay to display the Ten Commandments in public schools?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that we need to display the Ten Commandments in the rest of the 49 states as well. They represent the best that America has to offer. Our common civilization is built on Judeo-Christian principles, and the Jewish people were chosen by God to represent those principles. Nothing represents those more than the Ten Commandments, and the Jews should be leading the charge and not an obstacle in the way.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you anymore. So the question then is, why are some liberal and progressive Jews not holding a high view of the Ten Commandments? Why is there opposition among some?
Well, the Jewish community has really been run by the liberal establishment, the Jewish liberal establishment, for many, many decades. And they have been at the forefront leading the charge against the public displays of the Ten Commandments in any religious symbolism. They see it as inappropriate mixing of church and state, and see it as a way of endorsing a particular worldview. That's not how the observant Jewish community sees it. It's not how the Orthodox Jewish community like myself sees it. The Ten Commandments are not a particular worldview. It is the worldview. the universal worldview that Judeo-Christian and Western civilization is built on. And we've seen that as America moves away from the morality of the Ten Commandments, the morality of the Bible, so the culture and the society is just deteriorating.
Well said. Couldn't agree anymore. So what is your response to your fellow Jews, who, particularly those who are fighting the public displays of the Ten Commandments? What do you say to them?
You know, we have seen that whenever society deteriorates, the Jews are like the canary in the coal mine, and we are always the ones who get the persecution, who get the crime, and who feel that persecution and that discrimination. We're seeing that all over American cities on a daily basis. The Jewish people are there's so much anti-Semitism all over the place. And so, you know, whenever American cities, when they're riddled with crime, so we need to be embracing the do not steal. And when there is rampant adultery and promiscuity, so we need to embrace the commandment, do not commit adultery. And when there is so much things in the society that are just breaking down, we need to honor our God. And that is what the Ten Commandments is really all about. And so there are many in the Jewish community who are opposed to this and who want to see public displays of the Ten Commandments and who even want to see prayer in public school. It's something that the Jewish community are recognizing, the fact that America has moved away from public prayer and moved away from public displays of religion. It is leading to the deterioration of American morality and the American society. And Jews want to help rebuild that and repair that. And so we are indebted to Governor Landry. We are appreciative of him, and we are eager to work more closely and to establish better relationships between Jews and Christians.
So how would you encourage your Jewish brothers and sisters to support the public display of the Ten Commandments, recognizing the need for it to happen? What is your encouragement to them?
You know, a lot of Jewish schools already have the Ten Commandments hanging in them. So that's something that in a lot of Jewish families, Orthodox and observant families, do send their kids to private schools. So it's because the public schools have moved so far away from morality. Jewish schools are already displaying Ten Commandments, but certainly in neighborhoods where there's a large Jewish population, we should encourage those public schools to get on board and to maybe through the parent bodies to encourage the Ten Commandments from being displayed. And really to build relationships between the Jewish community and the Christian faith leaders. I think that we'll realize that, in fact, we are in this battle for our society together, and we need to help rebuild the morality that America is based on.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Rabbi Wise. Thank you so much for your bold stance and the stance desperately needed at this hour. And thank you for joining us on Washington Watch. All right, friends, after the break, we will continue with our weekly worldview segment with David Clawson. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at washingtonstand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Thank you so much for joining us today. Honored to be sitting in today for Tony. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. Before we dive into our next segment, I wanted to remind you just one more time that as you have been hearing from Tony over and over in recent days, the GOP Platform Committee, they're going to be meeting a week before the party's upcoming convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And the big question is what the platform is going to say on the life issue. Well, considering how we've been watching so many within our party shrink back from speaking on the life issue, we want to ask you to tell the state party chairs to protect life in this upcoming 2024 GOP platform. And one of the easiest and most effective ways that you can do to help in that cause is simply to sign a petition urging them to support the platform committee delegates who are going to be fighting to keep pro-life values in this upcoming platform battle. So you can do it one of two ways. You can either go online to frcaction.org/life, or you can simply text the word life to 67742. Either way, you know, this is a time, it's a critical time. And where the platform is going to go is of enormous significance, and we don't want to drop this issue of life. So your voice is needed. Go to frcaction.org/life or text life to 67742. All right, well, with the national campaign now under full swing, many Americans are beginning to tune into the presidential race. I think probably the debate was evidence of that. And they're also tuning into Senate races, to House races, to local races. And in addition to the matchup between President Biden and Donald Trump, you also are aware that one-third of the U.S. Senate is going to be on the ballot in November, along with all 435 House races. And then in addition to that, there are several states that have some key referendums. There are constitutional amendments. And so as the November election draws near, we are watching an increase of claims of Christian nationalism and the like. This type of stuff is already being leveled toward evangelical Christians. So how do we need to be responding to all these arguments? And what is the proper Christian approach to government? Well, to discuss these questions and more, I'm honored to be joined by our weekly Worldview segment personality, David Clausen. He's the director of the Center for Biblical Worldview here at FRC. David, always great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Always a joy, Jody. Thank you.
All right, well, let's jump into this. There's so much talk about Christian nationalism these days. Let's begin with, what do we mean by Christian nationalism? This has become certainly a favorite buzzword on the left. So let's begin with a definition.
Well, and Jody, I think that's where the rub is, because there really actually is no agreed upon definition. Now, some people, when they use the term Christian nationalism, they simply mean that they're a patriot, they love their country, and they believe that Christian morality and Christian ethics should have influence in this nation. And that's really what they mean when they use the term Christian nationalism. There are others, though, Jody, who, when they say Christian nationalism, by that, they really have actually kind of conflated their Christian identity with their American identity. They kind of see them as one and the same. Kind of on the kind of far right, so to speak, there would be those who actually would argue, you know, this is a Christian nation. Because it's a Christian nation, we need to kind of impose a theocracy. We should impose, you know, the Decalogue or the Ten Commandments. And so that, I think that's the rub, Jody, is that there are so many different definitions that are out there. Now, I think what's important, though, and again, academics love to talk about these things. There's blogs and, you know, all sorts of articles that have been written on this trying to define it. But why this actually matters for your everyday regular person is that this term Christian nationalism has been weaponized by the left. I'm thinking of figures like Bill Maher and others who are kind of using Christian nationalism, that phrase, kind of as a scaremongering technique to really paint a broad brush over any evangelical, any Christian for that matter, that believes their faith has a public dimension to it, that they should vote on the life issue or religious liberty because the Bible gives us guidance on that. And so there's those on the left who have kind of weaponized this the same way other phrases, you know, the right wing, the religious right. This really, again, is just a term I think that a lot of people have weaponized. And so, again, I think the academics are going to continue to talk about it. I think for the regular everyday person, we need to realize that this is being weaponized against people like you and me that just believe that Christians should be engaged with the political process.
Yeah, it certainly has been majorly not only nationalized, but weaponized to, you know, and it's presented to be such a negative. It's like the MAGA Republicans, a radical Republican, the threats to democracy, all these kinds of things are wrapped up together. Let me kind of take this a step further with you, David. The recent discussions, if we will, about the new law in Louisiana requiring the posting of the Ten Commandments in classrooms. And then we had on just with us yesterday, Oklahoma's top education official, where they are now, they've pushed out a memo requiring every Oklahoma school to incorporate the Bible as instructional support, as part of the teaching for students in grades 5 through 12. The left, obviously not surprisingly, but they're branding these as efforts as also being part of what they claim as Christian nationalism. So what's your take on the left's reaction to these efforts, particularly considering how they are so ready to argue in favor of injecting radical LGBT ideology and much more into the classrooms, but they just don't want the Bible in any shape, form, or fashion?
Yeah, Jody, let me answer this question as kind of the convictional Baptist that I am. And, you know, Baptists historically have been in favor of the separation of church and state. You know, my Baptist forebears, not too far from where I am right now in Virginia, were not allowed to preach. They were not allowed to pastor local churches because of the state church. And so, again, as a Baptist, I'm all in favor of the separation of church and state. I'm not in favor, though, of the separation of morality and government. By the way, Jody, and you know this, that phrase, separation of church and state, was a phrase coined in a letter in 1802 to the Danbury Baptist Association by Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson by no means was saying that the state should have no influence from the church or from religion. But he did say the state can become inherently tyrannical and that the church should be protected from an overreaching state. But I think what's so interesting about this debate from Louisiana is they are not mandating a state religion. They're not trying to violate the Establishment Clause. Even in the legislation that was passed in Louisiana, it actually requires simply a preamble above the Ten Commandments that simply says, hey, the Ten Commandments are a prominent, have played a prominent part of American public education for about 300 years. And so just appreciating the Judeo-Christian heritage, I think that's a fine thing to do. And I think it's an important thing to do. And to your point, Jody, I was actually speaking last week to a religion and politics class, secular university, and the students actually pushed me on this. Aren't you just trying to be a theocrat and legislating your morality? And the answer I gave them, Jody, is this: there is no such thing as a naked public square. All legislation is imposing someone's morality. And you might be offended with the Ten Commandments in a classroom, but you're not offended with the rainbow flag in the New York City public school, you know. And so I think someone's worldview is always being introduced into the public square. And I think as Christians, we should be absolutely in favor of the Ten Commandments, which is the basis of so much of our history. And I do think this is much to do about nothing, but as far as the left's outrage. But then again, Jody, we've become accustomed to this.
Yeah, but you're exactly right. I mean, it's not like this is something new that all of a sudden let's put the Ten Commandments in the courthouse or in the schools or utilize the Bible. This is what we have done in our country from its founding, from its very beginning. And what we're trying to do is come back to some of those national principles that served us exceedingly well for generations. And it's only as we have departed from those things that we have seen the continual collapse, not only of morality, but so many other major principles in our country, including freedom. But the left now is using this terminology of Christian nationalism. I think additionally, from what we're talking about, they're also using it now to try to dissuade Christians from even getting out and engaging in politics, even to the tune of not even voting. And last week, you and I, when we were talking, we talked a little bit about a few theological principles that undergird Christian political engagement. And you mentioned stewardship and love of neighbor as a couple of things that as reasons for why Christians should engage. Can you develop those a little bit further? Are there some other principles or reasons that Christians should also engage in politics?
Yeah. Just briefly, Jody, I do think those are helpful principles. You know, can you really say you love your neighbor in a comprehensive way if you're not engaged in the public square where so many decisions are made that directly impact the welfare of your neighbor? And I do think stewardship as well. We're called to be stewards of our time and our resources. But those of us who live in a constitutional republic are also called to be stewards of our vote. Another verse, though, to kind of add on to that would be Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 7. You know, the people of Israel, because of their disobedience and sin, they're being led into Babylonian exile. And what does the prophet say? He says, seek the welfare of the city, because in its welfare, you will find your welfare. And so we have other examples. Think about Joseph and Daniel. There are all sorts of examples throughout the Bible where people are engaging in the political process, engaging in government. Government is not something that's inherently dirty, Jody. Romans 11 says God always has a remnant. And my goodness, living in D.C. now for the last 5 years, I'm so encouraged by the good, godly men and women who are at all levels of government. And so you're right, Jody. I think this idea that we should, in the church, just do evangelism but not politics, that's a term that Wayne Grudem famously articulated as a paradigm that a lot of Christians are tempted to fall into. No, we do evangelism first and foremost, but we also engage this political process because we love our neighbors and we love our friends.
And, I might add, because God instituted politics and government. This is not a man-made thing. God created the family, he created the church, and he created government. And for us to say we're going to engage two out of three That in itself is missing the mark that God has laid out for us. It's something else, David, that you have talked about before. In fact, you've even written about in FRC's Biblical Worldview series, is this whole idea that there are certainly some issues that the Bible speaks really clearly about, life, for example. But there are some other issues that the Bible doesn't directly address, and yet the principles are still there as guidelines. What are some of these issues that come to your mind?
Yeah, I think most people, Jody, are familiar with the idea of triage. You know, you go to a hospital and obviously, you know, the gunshot victim gets treated before the person with the scraped knee. Like, there's a priority of the issues. And I think for Christians engaging in the political process, we need to look at the Bible and what are issues that are really clearly articulated. You know, I think, unfortunately, some Christian leaders, well-meaning Christian leaders, have kind of said, you know, have written in a way that, you know, God has a position on everything. You know, there's a Christian position on a capital gains tax or a Christian position on emission levels or something like that. And I think that's not helpful. What is helpful, though, is looking at God's word and what are the issues that there's a thus saith the Lord. And one of those issues, the reason I talk about it so much, is the life issue, Jody. We have Psalm 139. We have Luke 1. Issues related to the family. We have Genesis 1 and 2, Ephesians 5. Issues related to sexuality. We have Romans 1, 1 Corinthians 6, 9, 1 Timothy 1, 10. And so just general guidance, where the Bible speaks and where the Bible is the most clear and the most emphatic, I think that's where we need to be the most clear and emphatic as we articulate principles and fight for policies that are congruent with what the Bible actually teaches.
All right, here's one that I hear a lot. I'm sure you do as well. But there's a lot of this really come about. I highlight it. I guess it's 2016. But there's so many people out there, even some prominent individuals, who would say something to the effect that when you have two imperfect candidates, choose neither. Okay, or you know, maybe when faced with two evils, choose neither. So, what's your response to this argument? Can a Christian choose the lesser of two evils when it comes to politics? I mean, after all, no one's perfect.
You're right, Jody. No one is perfect. I think it was Augustine who famously kind of articulated that in a kind of a different context. But I remember I was in seminary, Jody, in 2016, and someone I greatly admired kind of made that argument. Particularly in the context of the 2016 election, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, when faced with, you know, the argument was when faced with two options that are not desirable, choose neither. And, you know, I had to think about that, Jody, and realized unless Jesus Christ is on the ballot, we're always choosing between the lesser of two evils, whether we're voting for president or county dog catcher. We're always going to be voting for the lesser of two evils or the lesser of, you know, perfect candidates or options. And that's where we have to do the hard work of thinking and looking at policy positions, looking at the scripture, looking at where candidates stand, looking at things like the party platform. And so, again, we can't check our minds at the door when we engage in as Christians in the political process. We need to do all of these things. And honestly, that's one of the reasons the Center for Biblical Worldview was founded a few years ago, is to come alongside pastors and parents and Christian people to think about these issues together and try to think as faithfully and biblically as possible.
All right, just a few seconds left. You brought it up right there, and I think that's a great way to end. Where can people go to find out more about FRC's Center for Biblical Worldview?
Absolutely, Jody. FRC.org/worldview. People can find all of our resources at FRC.org/worldview.
David Clawson, always great to have you on this segment discussing the news from a biblical worldview perspective. Thank you so much for joining us today, and happy 4th to you.
Happy 4th. God bless, Jody.
Thank you so much. All right, friends, that wraps up this edition. I hope you as well have a happy 4th of July, and thank God that we live in the greatest, freest country in the world. We'll see you next time on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.